You're listening to More Perfect Marketing, the show for business owners and entrepreneurs always on the lookout for smart marketing ideas to keep their business moving forward. And now, here's your host, David Baer.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. My name is David Baer, and today we're going to talk about a fascinating practice that I think you will have encountered, as I have, in the world of music and art. And we're going to actually dive into how this applies to marketing in a moment. But let me tell you a story. When I was a kid, my grandmother, who was an art teacher in the New York City public schools, used to take me to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And we would, you know, walk through the galleries and look at the amazing artwork. And I noticed kind of an odd thing. As I was going through the halls and looking at the artwork, there were other people there who weren't like browsing, looking around. They were actually like stationary. They set up a little shop. They set up like a little easel. And in front of an artwork on the wall, they were sketching or even painting that same artwork. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. And I'd ask my grandmother, you know, what's this all about? I was thinking, well, these guys are like ripoff artists. They're copying the work on the wall, and they're going to go out on the street and sell it, just like the guys I had seen, you know, selling stuff on the street. And she said, no. This is how artists learn. This is how they learn their craft. Well, we're going to dive into this and how it applies to marketing today with my guest, Csaba Borzashi. Csaba, welcome.
David, awesome to be here. Thank you so much. And I love the intro, like starting off with a story. That's smart.
Okay. I want you to speak more about that, because I'm curious why starting off with a story is smart. But before you tell us that, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and why what I just shared relates to who you are?
Yeah. So I've been a freelance copywriter for about 4 years. What this means, basically, direct response copywriting, in case some of you don't know it, basically we write messages that sell stuff or that compel people to take action. And earlier this year, I basically made this crazy plan to break down 100 proven sales letters written by the best copywriters of all time over the course of 100 days, and then document my process through daily videos. Because, you know, I wanted to dive deeper into the craft. I wanted to create like an evergreen content library. And this, like, just like you said, people have been telling me to, you know, study the greats. We have like a common mentor, Brian Kurtz, who considers these people the titans of the marketing, of the direct response marketing industry. And I wanted to find out what the whole fuss is about. And this took me down a pretty amazing rabbit hole that resulted in so many life-changing realizations, experiences, new doors opens, and all sorts of great stuff like that.
So how does this relate to the copying thing? Because I think that in your world of taking written copy and actually, and you I think even teach this concept to folks on your email list, and then you also talk about why maybe you don't need to do it all the time, right? Mm-hmm. A very common practice is to actually go and find an ad, a sales letter, you know, and then Take a writing utensil, a pen or a pencil. This may be, you know, sort of alien to some people these days, but you can actually like write stuff with a utensil still and write it out by hand, like copy the entire thing. Similar to what, you know, the people I was describing at the museum were doing with the work of art on the wall. Why is that suggested? Why is that a practice that copywriters have been taught?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, to the best of my knowledge, Gary Halbert, another legendary copywriter, came up with this. And the idea behind it is that when you hand copy something, it forms this connection between your hand and your brain. It kind of engraves it into your subconscious mind. At least that's what the theory is. And in a sense, it's definitely true. However, I also studied cognitive psychology, and I've been a psychology researcher for some time. And it's not quite that easy. But I guess the biggest value when hand copying sales letters or ads or any other thing that you want to learn from is that you're spending, you're forcing your mind, especially nowadays when we're all attention starved, you're forcing your mind to concentrate on a single thing and you're slowing yourself down. As you're writing it, you cannot really write it that fast. And then you also have to concentrate on the words as you're writing them. And it's kind of like you're almost reliving the experience of those copywriters writing these ads themselves.
And so you kind of took that concept, and I know that you've suggested that some things are worth rewriting and some things aren't in terms of how to absorb it. I think I've also heard you talk about, how sometimes we just sort of do this mindlessly without paying attention.
And
you lose the ability to really absorb it. But you did something somewhat similar as you were doing that breakdown that you were describing earlier, and making all the videos that folks can now see on YouTube. Well, by the way, we'll make sure that you can find those videos on YouTube, because it'll be a life-changing experience to go through and watch Csaba analyze these sales letters for you. I promise. So how did that sort of relate to the rewriting? You were doing something similar as you were analyzing, right?
Yes. So I wanted to give handwriting a try because I've heard so much about it. And I actually, as I started the challenge, for the first 20 days, I actually hand wrote those letters. But then I realized it takes way too much time. So, and I kind of, I'm phasing out more often than I wanted to admit. So then I shifted into reverse engineering those ads. And I started analyzing longer and longer ads, including stuff like 50-page ads.
Yes.
Like the famous End of America.
Rewriting, I imagine.
Yeah. I mean, I just didn't have the time for it, especially as I was doing it as a daily challenge. And I had, I got married during this. We bought a new apartment. I basically created a webinar launch funnel for a client. I did a bunch of stuff for my own business. So it was a busy time. But getting back to the topic, basically the workflow was that I would find an ad, I would read it, mark it up, the most important things, and then just turn on video and start talking about it, start analyzing it live on the video without editing it, without cutting things out, just my thoughts right there with those little notes. And the most magical thing happened because of this. I got into this zone, this trance state as I was doing this, and I don't know how, but each time I kind of turned off the video, I noticed that the video was at least 30 minutes long. And I didn't intend to be that long, because I know that YouTube's algorithm doesn't like these long videos, but it just kept on flowing and I didn't really mess up. I mean, maybe it's because, I kind of got, I was maybe channeling the spirits of the greats, or I was just, getting hooked on really, really high quality copy, and it would be different with lower quality copy, but it definitely made a really strong impression. And just like you said, the museum example, copying, I truly believe that if you're kind of copying, and I'm doing it in quotes, copying something like a great piece of art or message, in some way, shape, or form, and that can be hand copying, that can be reverse engineering, that can be just reading it many times, it's going to make you a way better professional at the given craft.
So a few minutes ago, after I shared that opening, you said, it was great to open with a story. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious why you said that.
Well, because we're hardwired for stories, and in the marketing industry nowadays, it's very hip to just, try to market things with stories, but not many people do it right. But the thing is, we live in an era in which people have been exposed to so many ads, so many empty promises, they've been burned so many times, and just promising something once again, or making your promise bigger, it's not going to cut it anymore. You need to kind of circumvent the the sales resistance that people have. And the best way, one of the best ways to do this is through stories, because we've evolved to tell stories. It's kind of, as you're telling it, and this is very important, the story has to be somewhat relevant to your reader or viewer or target audience. It's going to creep inside their minds. It's kind of like Inception, the movie. And if you do it right, all their sales resistance is going to go out of the window, and they will feel like you are kind of relating to them emotionally, even though you don't even know each other. It's very powerful.
Yeah, I and the fact that you come from this psychology background is even, you know, more powerful to sort of reinforce these ideas. Okay, there's a lot of directions that we can go, but I really want to talk about the fact that you chose to go back in time and look at what I'll call the old masters in mm-hmm. the space that you are in, which is copywriting, sales copywriting, just the way that the people in the museum were going back and, you know, copying the old Dutch masters, or, you know, Manet or Monet or whoever mm-hmm. they were, you know, trying to get a sense of. Why, when we've had so much progress over time, would anybody, I was about to say waste their time, mm-hmm, but invest mm-hmm. time in old stuff when there's so much new stuff that's benefited from advancement?
Ooh, I love that question. Well, here's the thing. There's no new thing under the sun. I would say 99% of all the gurus, all the marketing experts, all the authority figures today on this topic, they always go back to the same fundamentals, the same principles that essentially, like a guy called Claude Hopkins came up with like 100 years ago. And the reason why I wanted to go back to the source is because I wanted to see the essence. I wanted to see the undiluted version, because nowadays you're kind of getting, in a sense, you're getting a more advanced version of those essential early version marketing strategies, but some of it is getting watered down because people are looking for easier solutions, but easier solutions don't always work best. But on the other hand, I do admit that there are new strategies and new tactics that work better in some cases. So I believe that combining the two can make you into a double threat.
Okay, I'm now curious to hear about some examples of what you're talking about in terms of combining them. But maybe before we get there, we should talk a little bit about some of the stuff that you discovered in the old masters. So you went through, I think it was 90 or 100 different sales letters, if I remember correctly. And I've only made it through, 100. I think, like 30 some of the videos so far. I got
really
a lot
impressive.
To go.
That's really impressive, David. Yeah. It's a lot of content.
Yeah. But I know that you saw themes in there. Mm-hmm. I know that you saw, well, themes and motifs, I guess, are sort of interchangeable, but that you saw a lot of recurring patterns. And I'm curious sort of what, if you can summarize a couple of those, because I know that was a reasonably long mm-hmm. list, what things you saw over and over again that folks should be aware of in terms of, you know, how it might affect what they're doing in their own marketing. Mm-hmm.
Sure. So one of the things is that doesn't change is that people buy from people. They don't buy from corporations. They don't buy from all these brands. Well, maybe Coca-Cola, yes, but that's a different types of transaction. If we're talking about small business owners, people buy from people. And it really annoys me when I see all these big shot corporate marketing materials always talking about we. Our mission is this. We believe. We do this. Look at us. We're so awesome. But in essence, nobody cares about that. So one thing that is kind of copywriting 101, but the old school guys are the ones who actually put this into writing, is that you really have to appeal to the pains, fears, hopes, and dreams of your ideal customer avatar. It's really important because otherwise you're just noise at this point. That's one of the important things. The other one is that how you actually communicate. And again, we tend to overcomplicate things. And I partially blame the education system for this, because in school we learned that you have to sound smart. You have to use long sentences. You have to, when you write like a dissertation paper or something, and all the scientific stuff, they're super complicated, because then it must mean that they're legit, right? But when it comes to persuading someone to do something or selling, and even if you're, I don't care if you're marketing to PhD nuclear physicists as well, if you can convey your message in a simple way, easy to understand way, that's way better than trying to overcomplicate it and using all these sophisticated words, because even if they're smart, they don't have time to put in the work to decipher your message. And it's very interesting. If you like, there's have been some studies on this, and the data shows that basically, if you write at the sixth grade level, or maybe even a fifth grade level, your copy is going to convert way better than if you write on at the 10th grade level, because it's just easier, frictionless for people.
That's an important word, frictionless, because yeah. I think a lot of I encounter what you're describing a lot in businesses where they're using either industry-specific language or jargon, or they're really just trying to look smart by using big words. And what does that do to the consumer of that content, the reader, or if it's a video, the viewer, is they stop paying attention to what happens after that word or that concept is presented, because their mind is still trying to figure out what was just presented to them.
Yes, it's a very subtle thing, but it greatly reduces conversions, and it makes people fall out of your whole marketing funnel. It's because they constantly feel like they need to do some sort of work, or I'm telling you, like, here's a very simple example. If you were to have very long paragraphs, like let's say 5 sentences per paragraph, people look at it, especially on mobile, and they say, wow, this just seems like a lot of work. I mean, so much text to go through. But if you kind of separate your main ideas, like one main idea per paragraph, which is only made up of like 1 or 2 sentences, it's way better because it just flows much more seamlessly.
I've had this discussion recently, and you know, particularly with email, this is a perfect example where you want to encourage somebody to move through the email before they get distracted by the next email. Yeah. And if you're doing it on mobile, right, having that thumb pushing up the words on your screen so that you can continue to flow through it, it's a lot easier. But when you see that one big chunk of a paragraph, it stops the physical flow,
yes,
as well as the mental flow of the consuming the text.
Yes. And also one important thing, the way we read isn't necessarily like very structural, like we read every single word from left to right. We kind of scan the whole text that's in front of us. And if you have more white space, if you have more lines, more empty lines between lines or paragraphs, it's much easier to quickly and really subconsciously identify those keywords, even if they're not bolded. And that kind of tells people, again, subconsciously, like, oh, this is something interesting. So this is also something to keep in mind.
Yeah. So I asked you, you know, sort of to give us a basis of some of the things that you discovered, and then maybe you can tie it to some new things that you know, said, well, combining the two would be really useful. I'm curious, because I'm racking my brain trying to think, what's a really good example of this? And I know that you're exposed to way more out there in terms of, you know, advertising material than I am. And I'm also vamping to give you an opportunity to think of something. But if you have an example, I'm sort of curious.
Yeah, well, I would say like a simple example is there's this really, really OG copywriter called Eugene Schwartz. And he came up with the book called Breakthrough Advertising, which is kind of like, it's considered to be the Bible of direct response marketing or and copywriting, but it came out in the 60s. And one of the concepts there is called the stages of awareness, the five stages of awareness. And this is basically, it just says that your message has to resonate with people based on how ready they are to buy your stuff. So if they're on stage one, they're unaware, it doesn't make sense to give them a pitch because they don't even know that your product is the thing that they want. And they also don't know that there might be solutions to their problems. And they don't even know they have a problem. They're living their lives blissfully and they don't know of something. Like, for example, let's say you're trying to advertise, you know, like lower back pain solutions to a 20-year-old. Well, chances are your product might be the best product ever, but it's just super not relevant for that person. Mm-hmm. And of course, this also has to do with audience selection and why you should narrow down your audience and not try to market to everyone. Because many people I talk to, they always say, "Oh, I'm trying to market to everyone, 18-year-olds to 65-year-olds." But this is a big mistake. So if you use this stages of awareness concept, that's pretty much why funnels were invented, to kind of give people a specific message at each stage of their awareness. So in essence, this is how this looks like nowadays. If you want to build a funnel, the reason why you need blog posts or content is because you have a lot of unaware people who don't know they have a problem, and you kind of have to warm them up. And then let's say you try to reach roughly the same audience, but who are in a higher stage of awareness. So the second stage, problem aware. Well, your Facebook ad usually talks about problems, right? It's trying to make an emotional connection with people and then teases at a solution so that when people click through, they land on a landing page where you give them like a freebie or something valuable that solves one of their specific problems. And at this stage, they're solution aware because they know they have a problem and that they know that there is some sort of solution. And then they get on your email list, you start building a relationship with them, you nurture them, and then they slowly warm up to product aware when they first hear about your product, and then most aware when they're almost ready to buy, they just need a reason why they should buy now. So I think this is a great example of combining the like 50-year-old model of the stages of awareness, and how even if you're building a cutting edge funnel with ClickFunnels or something, and you can use many tactics. You can use like these little, pop-up proof boxes that are very popular nowadays. You can have your lead magnet as a quiz funnel. You can give them like a series of videos and a mini course. You can retarget them with Facebook ads, but they all try to appeal to the same 50-year-old model in essence.
Yeah, that's a very powerful concept that I think when I was first introduced to it, it was over my head. And, you know, thankfully, I've stuck with it to try to understand it. And now that I do, there's no looking back, right? It's one of those questions that you're constantly asking a business owner, you know, about their market to better understand how to position the business or the product or the service that they're offering in the right way. So that's the
best way to ensure that your headline or your message is going to be well received by your ideal customer avatar. Because again, if there's a major mismatch between the two, it's just not going to result in sales. If they're unaware and you're trying to pitch them, you're going to alienate them before they even got warmed up. But if they're ready to buy and all they need is like truly a discount from you, and if you're trying to beat around the bush, you're trying to not give them, like John Carlton used to say, just make the damn sale. Just sell the damn thing. You know, he also said this.
Yeah.
You know, in that situation, that's the correct thing to do. But you need to know the system for this.
I want to shift gears for a minute. Talking about informed by old masters, and I want to shift to another craft, because if I remembered it correctly, in another conversation, you mentioned that one of the people that has mentored you in this space is Kevin Rogers. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, Kevin wasn't always in the copywriting space. He was in a different industry. Can you share what that was?
Well, he was a stand-up comic, actually, for years. And he was a slacker for some years. And then the way how he got started with copywriting is that he kind of got... he read a book about it, and then he got under the wings of John Carlton, who was the mentee of Gary Halbert, you know, both legendary copywriters. And what put Kevin on the map is he started combining a joke formula from stand-up comedy with the elevator pitch. And then he created something called the 60-second sales hook, which combines a joke formula with like a typical short form pitch that you would tell somebody. And it also uses a story framework, by the way.
And I imagine that knowing people in the comedy space, performers, that a lot of what he learned in that initial craft was probably informed by people who had been, you know, doing it in generations prior to him as well. And those formulas don't really change as much, even though the style of delivery might change.
Yes, yes. I love how you formulated it. The style of delivery always changes. Sometimes we have Facebook, YouTube, Google, TikTok. What's this audio only social media? I always forget.
Clubhouse.
Yeah. So the mechanism or the delivery vehicle changes, but the most effective messages are just the same. If you would take 100-year-old copywriter, like who worked 100 years ago, and you would put him as charge of a Facebook ads agency nowadays, he would still be the best copywriter. It doesn't matter if it's a Facebook ad. Like, he would just have to learn what words to avoid because, you know, like, Facebook is very, very, you have to censor your messages so much nowadays, but that's it.
All right. I want to talk a little bit about where copy is applied. I've had a lot of folks here on the show who talk about email marketing in particular. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, the concepts that you're talking about used in email. We've talked about ads as well, but can you sort of walk through the prospect to customer life cycle, all of the different places where along the path of a business interacting with someone, they might be encountering copy of one sort or another.
And you're referring to email marketing specifically?
Well, no, I'm saying that, you know, it's all over the place, right? So it might start with the ad.
Yeah.
And then continue to progress. So where, because I think understanding what you do has been a challenge for a lot of business owners, mm-hmm, to say, mm-hmm, I understand what copywriting is and why it's necessary, mm-hmm, for me, mm-hmm, either to A, get really good at it myself, or B, why I need to invest in somebody who really understands this craft properly, mm-hmm, to advance my business. And so when you see how many different places in a business this craft ought to be applied properly, I think it's very revealing.
Yeah. So basically, whatever you use, any sort of messaging, you need copywriting. And I know that the name gets a bad rap, and I get it. It's a terrible name. First of all, most people just confuse it with a legal term, copywriting. And then it assumes that it's all about writing. But the best copywriters are always amazing marketing strategists who just specialize in the messaging area, which is called copywriting. But to get back to your question, like, most people nowadays, the first copy they usually find or encounter from like a small business is through an ad. And this can be a Facebook ad, YouTube ad, a banner ad, newspaper ad, it doesn't matter. But let's say it's a Facebook ad because it's really common. So they encounter an ad. Well, there you go. It's very, very important for that ad to have good copy, because otherwise it's going to cost you so much to acquire that customer. The click-through rate is going to be so low that it's just not going to be, it's going to just kill your funnel right off the bat. But once people click on the link, so the ad is working well, then you take them to the landing page, which again, from a copy perspective, is very important, because you want the most people as possible to submit their email address on this landing page or to request for like a demo or to start a free trial or something, because you've paid heavy, like real money for that visitor. You are paying a fortune for traffic, and then losing it on the page, which is on your website, it hurts. And again, it can kill your entire funnel. And then once people subscribe, and the reason why you're bringing up email marketing is because it's still arguably the best marketing channel out there, especially now. It's getting a renaissance. Never really died, although some people always say that, oh, email marketing is dead. It's not true at all. But good copy in emails is just as important. However, the cool thing about email marketing is that you don't have to be a professional copywriter to be really, really good at email marketing, because the thing that works the best is sharing stories, sharing case studies, just talking to people, just being vulnerable and establishing this thing we call know, like, and trust, because people buy from people they know, like, and trust. So one of the ways you can use this, and it all brings together copy and personal branding and email marketing, is to have a welcome, an automated welcome sequence that, you know, once people subscribe, let's say the first email just delivers on your promise, gives them the lead magnet, and then sets expectations. Then a day later, the next email is about your story. Let's say how you got started. And it's really interesting. About pages on websites, they are usually the second most visited sites on a website.
The About Us or About
Page? Yes, the About Us page. Uh-huh. Yeah, because people are curious. They are looking to hear about your story, who you are, why they should trust you, why they should buy from you when there are so many others out there. And anybody can say that, oh, we are the best, we believe this and that. But what truly makes you different is just making that subtle connection so that people feel like, oh yeah, this person understands me. But it's not enough to make the sale in most cases. It continues that first impression. It kind of takes the relationship to another level. Because as a marketer, you're always kind of fighting. You're fighting to get attention. Then you're fighting to keep attention. Then you're fighting to keep that attention even longer, right? It's a constant battle. And if you have great copy, that's your best weapon against this problem.
I want to jump in about this about page, because I just went to your about page and you do the same thing that I do on mine, which is you use it as a selling tool. In your case, you it looks like a sales letter, and you are giving people an opportunity to opt in to get something on that page. I was taught the same general approach, which is to use it to tell your story very briefly and then switch to the prospect and talk about them and how you can help them or et cetera, or, and show them resources, et cetera, because ultimately it's so visited, as you just said, right? It's an opportunity you don't want to squander. So kudos to you for doing that. And we're going to tell people what your website is in just a moment so that they can go check it out for themselves.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the plug. And yeah, it's totally true. Every page should have a specific objective, even if it's like a more content-oriented page, like an about page. And this is what real genuine marketing looks like. It's not about giving them hype, like very big claims or screaming basically that this is something different and better. It's about 75% about it is just talking to people. It's just sharing something useful, either a story or a content piece. And this is also called education-based marketing. But to finish up this email part, after you give them the next steps, after you give them the story, then you can basically easily send them a few emails, which are there to so-called shift their beliefs. So how you do this in real life? You just send a few emails of like false ideas that people have about your services or about your industry. And you can share case studies here. You can just say, you know, most people believe that they cannot lose weight because they just don't have the good genes for it, right? But the reality is that it has nothing to do with genes. Like, I'm just making this up. Like, it has to do with a lot of things, but you know, that's the idea behind it. You shift beliefs, and you don't have to be a professional copywriter to do this. You just have to communicate. The problem is most people have been really, really taught to communicate in a very complicated way. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And it's funny, the reason why they need a copywriter is because the copywriter is the person who channels this whole thing and who simplifies it and who makes it laser focused.
There's a ton more to where copy is used, and we probably could do an entire other episode on this, which maybe we should. But for now, we should. I want to point out. You mentioned as you were describing, you know, sort of moving from the ad to the landing page, and then from the landing page to get onto an email list. It's something that in the marketing world we refer to as a conversion. Right, converting that prospect into a lead, that lead converting them into a customer, etc. And this is actually an important word in your world because yes. Your business is called Game of Conversions.
Yes.
Conveniently, people can find out more about you and your business at gameofconversions.com. What will they find when they get there?
Well, they will find a bunch of useful stuff, but if they go to gameofconversions.com/copywriting-secrets, and we're probably going to have a link on this as well.
Sure.
Basically, they'll find a cheat sheet, which distills the most important things that I've learned during my 100-day proven breakdown sales letter challenge. And it basically extracts the secret recipe behind these 100 profitable ads. And it will also show you how to apply it to your own marketing for blockbuster response in just 15 minutes. And I can promise you this. It's really valuable. And it will also show you how to make the most out of these proven sales letter breakdown videos, which we're also going to have a link here. But combining the cheat sheet with the videos, and David, you're on my list. You know that, you know, I send out valuable emails.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's like getting a master's degree in copywriting.
Well, I signed up for that master's degree, and I'm happy that I don't have to pay the tuition that, you know, a traditional educational institution would be charging, but I'm getting tons and tons of value out of it. We'll make sure to include links to where people can get the secret recipe mm-hmm. and also the videos and your main website as well. Chaba Borzashi, how did I do?
Awesome. Really, really well. I know it's hard to pronounce my name. It's a Hungarian name, by the way, if you guys are interested, but A++.
Well, thank you. And thank you for all of your amazing knowledge and for investing so much time in your activity earlier this year to break down all of these ads. I know it's going to be valuable for many, many, many people for years and years to come. And certainly in positioning your business as well, which, by the way, if you're listening, that was a very smart move on Chava's part to do that project. That's another episode we'll talk about, I'm sure, at another point. But for now, thank you for hanging out with me.
It's my pleasure, David. Thanks so much. And thanks for listening, guys.
Indeed, indeed. Folks, you've been listening to another episode of More Perfect Marketing. Hope to see you back here again real soon.
You have been listening to More Perfect Marketing. For a collection of 26 smart marketing cheat sheets to help you master your marketing, please visit getdavidsgift.com. That's getdavidsgift.com. Once again, thanks for listening to More Perfect Marketing.